The word contagion has been around since the 14th century, but for most of its existence, it meant something different from what you might think. In order to make everything fit germ theory, the medical industry captured not only the definition of contagion, but also a number of related words. In the modern era, the notion of contagious disease-causing germs has gone into overdrive, and this theme has been reinforced by both Hollywood and the mainstream media. The fear campaigns have certainly been effective, and as we witnessed in the COVID-19 era, the majority of people believed that an imagined contagious germ not only existed, but justified all sorts of draconian population-wide interventions. Hence, what contagion is, and more importantly, what it is not, is one of the most important issues of our time. If language is not correct, then what is said is not what is meant. If what is said is not what is meant, then what must be done remains undone. If this remains undone, morals and art will deteriorate. If justice goes astray, the people will stand about in helpless confusion. Hence, there must be no arbitrariness in what is said. This matters above everything. Confucius. In 2011, the popular movie Contagion was released. As Wikipedia states, the plot concerns the spread of a highly contagious virus transmitted by respiratory droplets and fomites. Attempts by medical researchers and public health officials to identify and contain the disease, the loss of social order as the virus turns into a worldwide pandemic, and the introduction of a vaccine to halt its spread. In the film, the experts quote, project that 1 in 12 people on Earth will be infected with a 25 to 30% mortality rate. But never fear, a vaccine is developed by a heroic scientist at the CDC, and the vaccine is declared successful. I'm bringing sexy back, yeah. I think it's special what's behind your back, yeah. So turn around and I'll pick up the slack. However, there just aren't enough of the lifesavers to go around, so the CDC awards vaccinations by lottery based on birth dates. One of the filthiest pharmaceutical product classes that has been foisted onto the public is now being compared to winning the lottery. I'd be happy to throw that ticket in the trash. While those of us that are seasoned in the field will view this film as a comedy, we have to keep in mind that a large proportion of the public believe it depicts a realistic scenario. Underneath the YouTube video montage you have been watching, one of the top comments was, "The director did an amazing job showing the process of contamination and how the virus spreads." The mainstream media did their bit in promoting the then 9-year-old film in early 2020, with the New York Times reporting that the film Contagion is climbing up the charts. The article published on March the 4th, 2020 stated that Contagion also shows diligent scientists who ultimately save the day, a comfort for anyone looking for optimism, while highlighting the work of conspiracy theorists profiting off the spread of disinformation. You would be forgiven for requesting a bucket at this point. But it gets even worse. A month earlier, on the 4th of February 2020, Vox published an article titled, "The 2011 film Contagion is even more relevant in 2020, and not just because of coronavirus." They highlight the character played by Jude Law, who, quote, peddles various theories about the virus, such as the idea that it's been genetically engineered. He goes on national television to accuse the CDC director and the entire government apparatus of conspiring with Big Pharma to suppress a simple homeopathic cure called Forsythia in order to profit off a vaccine. Wow, swap Forsythia with ivermectin and we've got the permitted alternative narrative of a lab leak and suppressed treatments in the COVID show. If parts of the so-called freedom community still don't realise they have been played on this front, they need to read my husband Mark's essay, HIV inserts, lies, and lab leaks. The film Contagion is complete science fiction and packed with propaganda. The Vox article also stated that smallpox, Kate Winslet's scientist character informs us early on, was often transmitted from one patient to three others. The spread of false, harmful information is much faster and covers more ground thanks to the internet. It would be great to see the scientific evidence that the scientist character is referring to with regard to smallpox. It also flips reality on its head, as big tech and most governments control and censor any information that doesn't suit their favoured narratives. They are the all-time record holders in purveying harmful information. Anyway, the point of this little segue was to show how Hollywood and the corporate media have been pushing the notion of not only contagion, but deadly contagion. On this theme, we dedicated a subchapter called Prepare the Public with Hollywood Blockbusters in our most recent book, The Final Pandemic, noting how this fear campaign really took off from the 1990s onwards. Unfortunately, the fiction influences the susceptible, and if they do have any suspicions, Wikipedia's Contagion film entry reassures them that critics praised it for its narrative and the performances, as did scientists for its accuracy. So how did all this nonsense come about? The medical industry has a peculiar habit of perverting the definitions of words in order to make them fit its models. The virologists arguably lead the hall of shame in this department, particularly with their history of butchering the meaning of the word isolation. In 2021, I dedicated a whole video to exploring this concept in The Truth About Virus Isolation. When you can't actually show legitimate evidence, the easiest way to claim you have isolated a virus is to simply change the definition of isolation. However, even the very definition of virus has been a mirage, and as Mark wrote in his paper, Virus, Bacteriophage, and Single Virus Genomics, virology is a unique science within the field of biology because of the virologist's propensity to redefine the supposed material nature of the entities they claim to be studying. Mark included a quote from William Summers, who said in 2014, "A virus is what virologists say it is. It can be said that virologists invent and continually reinvent the concept of a virus as part of the normal progress of their science." Virology is certainly in a mess, which is not surprising, since the pivotal hypothesis of an infectious submicroscopic entity was never established from day one. And while we are here, infectious is another word that has been warped by the medical industry. The word infection entered the English language in the 14th century and derives from the Latin inficere, which means to spoil or to stain. The wider meaning of infect was also to fill with disease, render pestilential, pollute, contaminate, and to corrupt morally. You will note there is no mention of contagious germs here, because this is half a millennium before the introduction of germ theory. It is also interesting to see that the use of the word infection took off after 1880, the decade when the germ theorists were starting to be promoted. The linguists of the 14th century knew exactly what they meant, but these days everyone takes the word to mean being attacked by microbes. And now to the term contagion. What did that originally mean? The word forming elements are con, meaning together with, and tag, meaning to touch, handle, but also to strike, hit, affect, trick, cheat, mention, and speak of. Like infection, contagion is first recorded to have appeared in the English language in the 14th century and was taken to mean a communicable disease and a harmful or corrupting influence. This is very important to us, as once again, this is at a time well before germ theory had entered the common lexicon. Firstly, we'll consider communicable. These days it refers to the erroneous concept of pathogenic microbes, but that was not always the case. When considering this word, we can see how the Control of Communicable Diseases manual was once a little pocketbook when it first came out in 1917. Now it is 750 pages and keeps expanding. We have certainly been led to believe that humanity is under threat from more and more contagious diseases, and the number of dangerous microbes is increasing. This is one of the themes we cover in both Virus Mania and the final pandemic. Despite the incidence, and more importantly, the mortality of alleged infectious diseases falling into insignificance, the medico-pharmaceutical industry are promoting a narrative that involves more danger and fear than ever before, one that involves lockdowns of entire nations, as we witnessed during the COVID era. For anyone in doubt about the actual and massive reduction in what are claimed to be infectious diseases, I always recommend the Dissolving Illusion charts. Here we can see the dramatic reduction in mortality attributed to smallpox, diphtheria, pertussis, and measles, clearly showing how insignificant these diseases were becoming, as well as demonstrating that vaccines had nothing to do with the vast improvements. Jordan Henderson has also put together some superb charts confirming the retreat of all these major diseases. For example, this chart shows how the deaths attributed to scarlet fever had all but disappeared by the mid-1900s, with the absence of any vaccine. It is worth viewing all of Jordan Henderson's excellent material, and his charts include data from Belgium, Sweden, Ireland, the US, Norway, New Zealand, Scotland, Italy, Spain, France, and Switzerland. In any case, coming back to the concept of communicable, it meant able to be communicated, which originally related to the concept of a harmful influence. It was not until the late 1800s and the popularization of the erroneous claims that bacteria were harmful that the word was given a new connotation. This coincided with the entry of the word pathogen into the English language in 1880, meaning disease-producing microorganism. You can watch my video, Why Pathogens Don't Exist, to get an outline of why producing is not the correct term, as at most the microbes are only associated with disease. You'll see the adjective pathogenic below the entry. There was nothing wrong with this term per se, which dates back to half a century earlier, because it meant producing disease, without specifying that the cause was microbes. However, the noun pathogen created a new notion that real microbes, such as bacteria and fungi, and the soon-to-be-invented concept of a submicroscopic microbe, known as a virus, were all disease and death-dealing germs. Of course, as many of you will know, the word virus was originally taken to mean a poison, and how that was changed over time is a whole topic in itself. If you want to take a deeper dive into the history of the word, then you can read Mark's aforementioned essay, Virus, Bacteriophage, and Single Virus Genomics. On a wider front, the germ theory was never shown to be correct, as it was refuted in the late 1800s and early 1900s by doctors such as Max von Pettenkofer, Thomas Powell, and John Fraser. These doctors and many of their test subjects swallowed the so-called pathogenic bacteria of diseases, such as cholera and diphtheria, and suffered no ill effects at all. You can read about some of this history in Mike Stone's articles, The Infectious Myth Busted, and The Untold Stories of Drs. Powell and Fraser. I'll put the links in the description. For those claiming that this could be explained by, quote, immunity to the microbes, please watch my video, Is Immunity Real?, to see how such excuses are used to maintain germ theory through unfalsifiable and pseudoscientific clauses. Returning to definitions, what has just been outlined is how language has been distorted to make these concepts appear that they represent biological reality. There was nothing wrong with the original meaning of contagion, but the conflation with germ theory, or more accurately, the refuted germ hypothesis, has led most people to believe that microbes are being passed around to cause disease. In our lifetimes, the height of this nonsense has been the COVID-19 event, including the stay-at-home orders, social distancing, face masks, hand sanitizers, and other silly rituals. But the concept of contagion is why people do these things. Those who participate do so out of fear, as well as the belief that they are improving outcomes. Naturally, there are those going along who are simply agreeable or worry about conflict with others. But from what we have seen, the vast majority are still swallowing the contagious germs narrative. Perhaps the most important publication to date dealing with the concept of contagion is Daniel Reuter's new book, Can You Catch a Cold? This includes the collation of more than 200 contagion studies that reveal the monumental deficiencies in the evidence for the infectious disease model, a model that has long been promoted by the medical establishment and the mainstream media. It is therefore not surprising that these are not the studies that were shown to us when we were doctors in training. Like us and other critics of the germ and virus model, Daniel does not claim that people do not affect one another, but his book explains why there are perfectly adequate explanations that do not require the notion of pathogenic microbes. For example, fluids coming from our upper airways also contain tiny inflammatory molecules, such as histamine, which can affect others who inhale or swallow them. Daniel also discusses experiments where people exhibited cold and flu symptoms when given inactive substances that they merely imagined would make them sick. In addition, he documents historic incidents where supposed outbreaks of contagious diseases were subsequently revealed to be caused by nutritional deficiencies or environmental poisoning. The cause of people getting sick in clusters makes all the difference. The focus on microbes has been misplaced, and it is why pointless interventions like vaccines and face masks make things worse rather than better. As I mentioned in my 2021 video, Secrets of Influenza, I have the second edition of the Textbook of Influenza, which was published in 2013. The book is over 500 pages, and the word transmission appears in over 100 of those pages. However, there is no direct evidence provided for any human-to-human transmission of influenza, and tellingly, there is no mention of the Rosenau experiments and the other failed transmission experiments that were revealed in Daniel Reuter's book. Something I did not previously note the significance of can be found in Chapter 29 of the Textbook of Influenza. In a section concerning their imagined future pandemics, the authors state, "A stylized but not completely inaccurate description of such an outbreak is found in Steven Soderbergh's 2011 film Contagion. The combination of high-speed global travel, population growth, and urbanization conspire to facilitate the spread of a virus with pandemic potential. This reality poses profound and, some might say, insurmountable challenges for the public health community, for governments, and ultimately for the social order." Near the end of the textbook of influenza, it is stated that the best defense against influenza infection is not to get infected. We can see that this is incorrect and would say the best defense against influenza is not to believe it is infectious. If you do have a cold or bout of influenza, then it is best to allow the body to complete its detoxification process and healing, and then reflect on whether your lifestyle can be improved. Blaming germs or someone else for your condition will never bring about a better understanding of health. In this regard, please check out all the free resources available at drsambailey.com, as well as the book Terrain Therapy. What has been very encouraging in recent years is how many people are now contacting me to share new insights into identifying factors that made them or their family ill by moving beyond the germ blame game. At the end of the day, contagion is what you make of it. Those of us that essentially ignore the negative connotations find that the negatives ignore us. And could there be some apparently contagious things, such as smiling, that help us see the positive side of being around others? His paper gets quite graphic at this point, and there is a bedroom incident involving his ex-wife. Now Tony found there was another major issue with the CPAP machine, and that it tended to fill up his gastrointestinal tract. His paper gets quite graphic at this point, and there is a bedroom incident. If you enjoyed this video, please visit supportdrsam.com.